ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. Today we are pleased to bring you a conversation between radio host, author, and Discovery Institute Senior Fellow Michael Medved and fellow DI Senior Fellow Michael Behe, a professor of biology at Lehigh University. Thanks goes out to Mr. Medved for permission to repost their radio show conversation here.
In a moment in history where we can't gather consensus on how many votes were counted in a specific place in a specific day, where we can't seem to agree on some of the most fundamental stuff, is it surprising that we can't agree on the most fundamental stuff? The most fundamental stuff is the nature of life and the origins of life. And somebody who's thought deeply and written beautifully about that and devoted his life to researching it is a biochemist named Michael Behe. And he has a new book, and I've appreciated his previous books, particularly Darwin's Black Box and The Edge of Evolution. Michael Behe is a fellow of Discovery Institute and the Center for Science and Culture there, and he's a professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at Lehigh University. Michael, congratulations on the new book, A Mousetrap for Darwin. Now, you're not saying that Darwin's a mouse here, are you? That's the first question.
No, the mousetrap is a device that I use to show a problem for Darwin. I call it irreducible complexity. And that's that you have to have all the parts of the mousetrap together for it to work. And Darwin said that if you needed to put all things together, if you couldn't make something by numerous successive slight modifications very gradually, then his idea of random changes and natural selection wouldn't work. So the mousetrap is kind of a taunt for Darwinists.
Okay, now get this very clear here, and you are as clear as you can possibly be at the beginning of the book. You are not questioning what you call mere evolution. In other words, you say at the beginning of the book, there is terrific evidence consistent with the idea that organisms living today are descended with modification from organisms that lived in the distant past. So you are not taking the position that dinosaurs didn't exist. You're not taking the position that we don't have a long evolutionary history. What's the issue?
Well, the issue is what in the world could cause such profound transformations as starting, say, with a single cell and then unfolding it to give all of life on Earth. The idea of mere evolution, that is, evolution as just common descent from creatures in the past, was proposed well before Darwin. He didn't originate the idea of evolution. His claim to fame was that he thought he had discovered a purposeless mechanism for these changes. Before him, all the other folks who proposed evolution thought that it was a guided or a teleological process. And the idea simply of descent is I think, trivial, because it simply says you had an ancestor in the past, and now you've got a number of different animals that have lots of differences, but they also have similarities to each other, which supposedly they inherited from the ancestor. So you don't actually explain anything. You're postulating the ancestor, and you're saying that the traits were inherited, but you don't say where the ancestor came from or how these fantastic new systems arose.
And these new systems, you argue in A Mousetrap for Darwin, it's posted at our website at michaelmedved.com, are very clearly designed. And to focus this for just a moment, one of the things that you read in this book, which is a collection of your responses to your critics, a collection of articles, plus some brand new information, we know a lot more about mutations today than they did 160 years ago when Darwin wrote Origin of Species, right? So isn't it true that most mutations don't work in your behalf? They're not all favorable? Usually when you talk about a mutant, it's not some advantage, is it?
That's right. Probably 99%+ of mutations are, you know, harmful. They result in birth defects and diseases and bad stuff. But that didn't used to bother the Darwinists because they said, well, all those organisms will just die, and the ones that are left will survive, and occasionally a good mutation will come along, and that's where it gets its fuel. But recently,
one of those mutations, in other words, an eye. All of a sudden, if you have an eye, that's not a mutation, is it? That's because it's pretty intricate. The whole thing. All of a sudden now there's a little organism that's unicellular and it has eyes. How does that work?
To produce something or just to get a working eye, you need, you know, millions of different changes in an organism's DNA. You certainly couldn't get it by a single step. Kind of to give you the flavor of it, some people have resistance to malaria, the disease malaria, like folks who have sickle cell hemoglobin. And people have pointed that as a beneficial mutation, at least in regions of the world where they have malaria. But that mutation is a change in just one letter of their hemoglobin, which has about 600 letters. And it's only one change in all the proteins of their body. So it's like one change in, you know, hundreds of millions of units. So the point is that it's a tiny, tiny change, and it pretty much messes up the usual function of hemoglobin. So mutations, even when they're beneficial, generally work by degrading or sometimes even breaking genes that were already there.
Okay, you say in your book, and the book again is A Mousetrap for Darwin, that mutations in dogs give some indication of the limitations of Darwinian random undirected evolution. Give an example.
If you have a dog with white fur, that can result from breaking a gene that was involved in making colored fur, in making black pigment or brown pigment. If you have a dog with a short muzzle, kind of like a bulldog, doesn't really have much of a snout, that results from a gene that is broken that acts during development to lengthen an ordinary dog's muzzle. If you have a dog with short legs, all you have to do is break a gene that's involved in lengthening legs. Some varieties of dog are very muscular, and that results from breaking a gene that tells the body when to stop making muscle, when it has enough muscle. So now that science has the ability to look at DNA down to the very letters, down to the very sequence of the DNA of genes, we've been able to discover that most of the beneficial changes that Darwinists have pointed to over the years, such as dog breeds and other things, are in fact mutations that degrade or destroy pre-existing genes. And that's interesting and it's important, but it doesn't explain how genes got there in the first place or how complex organs such as eyeballs and other things got there too.
And, which is so very intricate. In terms of again, to get this clear, you are not saying for a moment that people shouldn't be taught about natural selection, because natural selection actually happens. It's just the idea that mere evolution isn't enough. The question is, how does evolution work, and where's it going? The book is A Mousetrap for Darwin. The author, Michael J. Behe. He's featured in the book, of course, along with his critics. It's fascinating reading on a crucial subject. Godspeed and have a great weekend. We will be right back.
That was Michael Medved and Michael Behe discussing Behe's new book, A Mousetrap for Darwin. Hop over to your favorite online bookseller and check it out. This has been ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.